Today's scripture reading is from Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 24. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So, if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. This is the word of the Lord.
All right, we're in the beginning of a series I've called Modern Plagues, Ancient Medicine. We had our first one last week on loneliness. So even if you're not into Jesus, right, if you don't buy it all, believe it all, you will recognize the expression of all the plagues that we go through in a wealthy, Western, educated, rationalistic culture. So you will recognize plagues like anxiety, panic, depression, loneliness, boredom. You will readily recognize those because we have, you, me, we've probably experienced them before. And there are accompanying to all those modern plagues, there are accompanying solutions and strategies and fixes that incorporate all the current psychological theories. But the problem with dabbling just around external behavior modification for all of these problems is that it never addresses the internal core, right? The internal, the root cause, if you will. Last week, if you were here, you'd recall this, is I was trying to make the case that, like Puritan Ralph Vining, who called sin the plague of plague. So I was trying to make a case that we can trace this back to sin within, sin without, right? Sin in us and sin pressing in around us. Which I realize this. I realize when I say and utter the word sin, it really sounds heavy-handed, right? It's not very urbane of me to say the word sin. But I would submit to you, I would just ask you, you look around and you see the brokenness and the disconnectedness and the crackedness of yourself, right? There's struggles and wars within yourself. You see it cracked and broken with you and other people, people and other people. You see it in systems and governments and communities. You see it. So I think you quickly recognize that you may have personal foibles and weaknesses, maybe even sins. And two, you recognize that everybody else's junk and problems, it gets all their ick all over you too. You see those two things, even if you're not into Jesus. If you're most intellectually honest, I think we can admit something here. We can send robots to Mars, and we can pack an amazing amount of LEDs in a square inch, but we haven't been able to solve the crackness of the human heart. One of my favorite, most used examples is this, is despite the great technological advances in the 20th century, right, you go from horse-drawn carriage all the way to the moon and beyond. Despite that, historians have called the 20th century the genocidal century. That is, more humans have killed other humans in the 20th century more than all the other previous 19 centuries combined, and I'm not including the wars in the 20th century. So, despite our great technological advances, we got problems. We've got problems. There's something wildly broken about beautiful, beautiful human beings that we haven't been able to heal. And so it comes out, it's expressed, it's manifested in hundreds of different ways, and I'm calling those plagues. And I've only really winnowed them down to about 10. so for today, what fun modern plague will we look at? Let's look at hoarding, which actually is to your great relief. Here, like those assembled here today, because you don't suffer from hoarding, right? This might be the one sermon where we can just kind of sit back and clinically observe all the weirdos who have the problem, okay? So sit back and enjoy it. Be relieved that you don't have this plague. Check your fantasy football scores while we're doing it. This probably won't apply to you. I'm probably wasting a sermon here, but let's just do it anyway, okay? So let's talk about hoarding. This is the shape of where I want to go. Number one, I really don't have a hoarding problem, okay? Number two is why we can't see our hoarding problem. Number three is, okay, I might have a hoarding problem, but watch me fix it. And four is, okay, maybe I can't fix it. Help me. No. Heal me. So that's where we're going. This might apply to you after all. You can still check your fantasy football scores. That's allowed. So let's look at this. I really don't have a hoarding problem. So let's give a really simplistic, basic definition of hoarding. It'd be like acquisition that doesn't get rid of anything. All inflow, no outflow. Hoarding has a sister. They overlap, actually. And we just call it greed. Okay? Greed is this. Pulling in everything I can for the exclusive advantage of me or the self, right? Pulling in for just the exclusive advantage of me, the self. We have another term, we just call it selfishness. It's a lot like greed. But it's very difficult to see that in ourselves. It's very, very difficult. When I first study this, I was approaching it, I was like, yeah, that's kind of not my, it's not my junk. It's not me. Well, who is it if it's not me and you think it's not you? I think generally we assume it's probably in two types or categories. So the first category would be the uber wealthy, and two, it'd be the crazy mentally ill hoarder, okay? As seen on TV, TLC, A&E, and Netflix series. So the first one, the uber wealthy. Have you seen rich kids on Instagram? Those of you who are the grammars, rich kids on Instagram is you get uber wealthy, really kids, right? They could be even teenagers, young 20s. And the challenge is how many luxury brands can you fit into that square Instagram screenshot? Bottles, babes, cars, watches, bling, jewelry, Supreme gear like you wouldn't believe. Lots of Supreme on rich kids of Instagram. Jets, hot tubs, yachts, helicopters. So let me give you a sample here. It looks like this. I put it in your bulletin. All of the luxury watches, like one is not enough. You put it on the steering wheel, but you do see the what type of car it is. That's cool. I don't know if you can see this. It's a receipt totaling about $48,982. And they love Ace of Spades rosé champagne. They must have bought like 46 bottles at $500 a pop. That's like $23,000 on that receipt. And then what's really cool is the yacht circle with the Insta swimming pool for you and your friends. So I think we kind of look like, oh, you know, that's... Well, there's another one. I gotta tell you this one. There's one where it's a deal on rich kids of Instagram to wear a T-shirt where it says "Stop being poor" in really big block letters. That one's always get the poor people riled up. And then they show themselves with fat stacks of cash, hundreds, spelling out things. Even guys on Instagram, they'll like, I'm gonna light $2,000 worth of bills on fire today for, you know, Follower Friday. That'll be fun. Throwing money off a roof and seeing just the commoners go for it. That's another Instagram fun favorite. If you watch this feed, you get this sense like wow, we need to reevaluate the direction of Western culture. Like, what has gone, where are their parents? You get full, huge walk-in closets, and it's all sneakers. It's just incredible. And now, most of us, look at rich kids of Instagram, and we're just like, oh, that's bad taste. Like, that's bad form. That's over the top. That's garish. You must be new to money. And so we look at rich kids of Instagram comparatively and say, oh yeah, that's clearly that is not me. Clearly that is not me. Or we do this, so that's one. Or we do this is we look at TV shows like Hoarders and we see the closets and the rooms and the garages and the attics and the storage units and the basements and the common space is just crammed and stacked to the ceiling. And we see the trash, and we see the vermin, and we see the filth, and there's no discernible organizational system at play. And so we look at that, and we think, cuckoo! Like, clearly there's nuts, clearly there's chips missing here. Clearly we need to consult DSM-5 and take a deep dive. There's a storage unit that we use for the church because I don't want all the stuff in my garage. And so I'll go there semi-weekly basis and, you know, either dump more stuff off or get more stuff. And when I go there, there's always just a few stragglers who have their unit, their garage door open for their unit. And many of these units are just packed all the way to the edge. And some older gentleman or gentle lady, as the case may be, will be piddling around with stuff at the very front and like relocating, and it looks like they're working very hard to organize, and I'm like, oh, sweetie. Sweetie, you're not even touching two-thirds of your unit. Like, you probably don't even have that inventoried in your head. Like, you don't, like, what? That's not, moving the lamp to, you know, a foot to the left, that's not helping things. And so I think, that's crazy. That's not me. That's not me. That's not you. There are not many people here think that you are greedy hoarders, myself included, because like I said, the rich kids of Instagram, that's over the top, it's crazy. And the mental problems are cuckoo. And none of us thinks, we're not like that. That's not the type. That's not our type. We're not greedy, pathetic, mentally damaged hoarders. But I'm going to tell you is that it's a modern plague that touches us all. And Jesus actually spoke about this more than he did lust, which you'd think, hey, Jesus, wouldn't it be great if you called everybody's attention to how they are just sleeping around and we really need to touch on this. But Jesus said, no, I'm going to talk about hoarding and avarice and greed more than anything. Why does he say that? He doesn't say this. It's funny, is it's the only subject that Jesus says this. He says, you got to look out for this one. Like, you got to check out and see if it's creeping up on you. Beware, he says. And it's the only subject he says talking about adultery. He does say, yeah, you need to flee that. You need to run away from things. You need to leave it. But this is the only one where he goes, you need to have your radar on because it could creep up on you. He never says this, be aware of adultery. Like adultery can creep up on you and pretty soon you're doing it, but you don't realize it. Right? None of us are like, oh, wait, what? I guess I'm adulterating now. I had no idea. None of us are like that. This is actually one of the scariest plagues that none of us suffer from but because we don't know we have a problem. We don't know we have a problem. You don't see or feel the tumor. We're hoarders and we don't know it. So I want to the second thing I want to say is, why can't we see our hoarding problem? Why is that? This middle section that Marius read for us in Matthew 6, 22 through 23, we get this weird aside. So Jesus is talking about money and hoarding and avarice and greed. And then we get this section, and the section says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy and your whole body will be full of light, but if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. And if then the light is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? And then he starts talking about money again. And you're like, I don't know what you did there. Like if you took logic, this is a non sequitur, like it didn't follow. We were talking about money and then you were talking about lamps and light and darkness and hearts and eyes, and then you start talking about money again. And I know I'm supposed to know that whatever you said was related to money, but I have no idea what you just said. That's how I read it. I don't know if you did. So here's this image. It's really basic. Just stick with me, okay? I know this is not a kindergarten classroom. So if you have a room full of light, it's just easy to get around, right? You can walk around this room, all right? If a room is not filled with light, then you step on Legos and you say daddy's golfing words, okay? Like if you don't have light. But there's another image, which is really basic, and it says, well, there's another way we can look at that. It says, if your eye is dark, or it's clouded, or it has a patch, or patches, or a blindfold, or if you're blind, if there's something wrong with your eye, then it's as if the room is dark. It's as if the room is dark. And you'll still hit Legos and furniture and yoga balls and shoes and toys, and you will still use creative combos with your favorite words. That's my life. So we know it has to do with money, that image I just said, but how? This is what Jesus is saying, is money actually clouds and darkens our eyes, so it is if the room is dark. That's another way to say it, is money blinds us. That's what he's asserting. Now, this is what I want you to do. Most sins, I know them, I see them, I know when I get mad, I know when I lust, I know when I cheat. But greed and avarice, covetousness and hoarding, it just hides itself from our perception to see it. So this is what I want to do, is I want to give you two common sense, just really everyday common sense ways where this is just self-evident to me. And you can buy it or you can't. You can be like, nope, that was hocus pocus, I don't believe you. Okay, so I'm going to give you some really common sense ways to show you that we are blind to money. So the first one is this. When we buy our brands. All right, everybody's got their favorite brand. And all of us buy products, all of us do. Weekly, daily, we buy stuff. Now, personally, we're an Amazon family. All right, it probably is maybe attached to our laziness and not wanting to leave our house and go to the store. But we are an Amazon family, so if we need something, we search it up. Which, sidebar here, why does the younger generation say search up? I'm gonna search that up. No, it's look it up, people. It's look it up. My kids say search it up, or I'm gonna go search it up on Google. No, that doesn't make sense. So, all right, back from the sidebar. I say I get personal privilege. I can just go off on any of that stuff. So what do? We need a product, and we go on there, and we search it up. And what we do is we see hundreds of types, and we see hundreds of choices, and we see lots of brands, and you can even do the filter. You do this, go price lowest to highest, price highest to lowest, right? You do that, we do that, and everybody in this room finally lands on a choice. Everybody lands on a choice, and what it does is it fits you. It fits your economic situation at the time. It fits your luxury level and desires at the time. It fits the need. It fits your willingness to be brand evident in whatever you bought. And we know something, I know something, and you do too, is I know the brand I didn't pick above, and I know the brand that I didn't pick below. Okay? You do too. And this is it. But I'm not going to get those because I got what fit me. So what happens? You and I will get a little bit more money. We'll get little raises. Grandma and grandpa will give us a little cash. You get a little bit more money the older you get. And your stuff wears out and you buy more products and you gradually repurchase everything. What are you doing? In thousands of microtransactions, what are you doing? You're upgrading. You're upgrading. Where I am, at the time, my desire, my budget, etc. So in actuality, we're kind of always maxed out. But it's happened over thousands of transactions and we didn't notice it. Let's call that blindness. Let me give you another way where we in our, where we're blind. Our eyes are dark. So here's one. It's in how you place yourself in our culture and society by your position. All right? So if you didn't buy the first one, maybe you'll buy this one. There's a lady, she used to be at Harvard, she's at Boston College now, her name's Juliette Shore, and she wrote a book called The Overspent American. And she says this, it's really fascinating, she says, and she's talking probably, yes, Western society, but she really focuses on Americans, okay? And she says this, Americans aren't really into classes, like, Downton Abbey, where there's a strict line between the house staff and the aristocracy. And she said, and we're not into that caste system where it's difficult to break out of. And she said, we don't actually have a one-size-fits-all, stratified, different levels of society. Not an American. She says this, and this is her thesis. She says, what we do have are reference groups. Reference groups. It's a fascinating. So she said, this is a reference group. So let me give you an LA example for a reference group. It would be this, is let's say you're a part of the, there's probably not too many of them, but like, it's just easier for a distant illustration, right? The LA acting actor actress reference group. Okay? That's one group. There's many different groups. There could be, a doctor reference group, a lawyer, you know what I'm saying. So the actor reference group is, we know that at the bottom of the actor reference group is you are a waiter / DJ / caterer / real estate agent / actor. We know it's the gig, right? You're hustling to make it, but that's the bottom of that reference group. And then, but we know it's highly nuanced as far as where you are in that reference group. So the next one would be like, you're an extra on shows who teaches workshops on the side. And the next level above that would be like, you got into a stage show, but you're a part-time teacher at a high school. And then above that, you're a theater teacher who enters short film festivals on the side. And then you get you're a regular bit actor, and your spouse or significant other is full-time while you do that. And then above that, you land a show, but you only do a pilot to the show. And then above that, you land a show, but it's only on FX in Norway somewhere. And then above that, like, you land a show, but it's on the Hallmark Channel. And then above that, you finally hit a show, and it gets syndicated. And then above that, then people want you to do movies on the side, and then you're doing movies full-time, and then you're writing and directing and producing, and then you're managing and stable. Like, that's one reference group. Now, this is what's interesting, what Juliette Shore says. She says, everybody in that reference group wants to be a part of that group very badly, and they drink the LA actor and actress drink, and they wear the LA actor and actress clothing, and they get the same furnishings, and they get the same houses and cars, and instead of being stratified, you actually are rubbing shoulders. Everybody in that reference group rubs shoulders with each other all the time. And she says this, she says, everyone poignantly knows where they stand, and nobody feels as if they are rich. Two examples, right? Microtransactions in our reference group, we're blind to our wealth. Hal Steger captures this. He recently died about a year ago. Silicon Valley guy, made his money in Oracle, CompuWare, Rubrik, made millions of dollars. And he was quoted in the New York Times by saying this. He said, I know people looking in from the outside will ask why someone like me keeps working so hard, but a few million doesn't go as far as it used to. Maybe in the 70s, a few million bucks meant lifestyles of the rich and famous, or Richie Rich living in the big house with a butler, but not anymore. He didn't feel rich. Why? Because he was part of the Silicon Valley reference group. He didn't imagine himself to be wealthy. We spend way too much on ourselves and we don't know it. We're hoarders. Our eyes are dark. Inflow, no outflow. All right, let me prolong your misery just a little bit more. All right, permit me. Do you ever ask this question? Am I spending too much on clothing, technology, or car, or furnishings, or how much I spent on eating out this weekend? Do you ever just ask that question? Do you ask this question ever? Is there any possible way I could live differently to increase my outflow? Do you ever ask that question? Do you ever share that with anyone else, like a friend? I'm not saying broadcasting it to the world. Or do you ever want a friend to ask you those questions? And now a lot of us here would be like, I would never ask my friend that question. Here's another question. Why wouldn't you want to look? Because money makes you not want to look. Doesn't make me want to look. It makes my eyes dark. And Jesus says this, how great is that darkness? How great is that darkness? Okay, so you say, okay, I see what you're saying. Thank you, you're a jerk. I'll grant you, I might have a hoarding sore throat. I might have a little hoarding cut. But watch me fix it, buddy. Watch me fix it. So if we think of hoarding, our hoarding problem, our greed problem, in terms of external stuff, then our proposed human fix will always address the external stuff. So if you think your problem is your stuff, you will address the problem through addressing the stuff. So if you could feel guilty, right? I could preach this and be like, oh, I guess I do love money too much and feel really weighted down. I guess I do have too many things. What's the opposite of having too many things? Having a few things, right? So our cultural solution to that is I'm going to minimize, I'm going to go minimal, I'm going to go Marie Kondo on my life. That's our cultural solution. This is the weird addictive part of it is that it does give you external results. It does give you a measure of control. It gives you great organization and the coolest t-shirt and sock drawer. It does. Like that, it works. And there's a great interest in living stripped down, being lean, rejecting the consumerism. It's funny as some of you are maybe hard on millennials, but millennials as a group are actually pushing back on all the consumerism of the generations before them. And they are questioning and reevaluating right now the ownership of car, house, and property. And then they say, okay, if you must have a house, maybe you could share it with people. If you must have a house, what about a tiny house? I remember reading an article. So this is only for people who grew up in the 90s. I'm sorry. But do you remember Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill, 90s people? All right, and I remember reading an article where this was after her albums had exploded and she had gotten a lot of money, and then she did that jaunt to India to get herself spiritually recentered, and then she came back to the States, and she, in this article, it was described that she got a small apartment off of Venice, and she had her guitar there, and she had a mattress on the floor with no frame, and she had like five articles of clothing in her closet, and she had this quote in the article. She said, I don't want the clutter to clutter me. Okay. Marie Kondo would approve. It would spark the greatest joy in this article. But why doesn't that fix the problem? Later on in the article, Alanis Morissette said this. She said, I am pursuing peace, but so far it has eluded me. So after going minimal and your sock drawer is on point, why are we not more peaceful, still, and kind, and unhurried? And unanxious. Maybe even more generous. Jesus says it's because our eyes are dark and they need light. So in Matthew 6:22, our translation doesn't communicate this. I was disappointed by this. He says this. He says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. It's interesting, instead of full, I like the word there. The word is actually open to light. And Jesus uses a word there that goes two ways. It means open, so light goes through. But that word is also used in the openness of generosity. Miroslav Volf. He used to be at Fuller. Now he is at Yale at the Center for Faith and Culture. He said he latches onto this and he says this, for the heart to see rightly, the hand needs to give generously. The opposite of hoarding isn't the minimalistic life, it's generosity. And our fixes don't really change the real problem, the real plague. Going stripped down, going all Marie Kondo didn't make us generous. We just hoard more invisibly and organized while doing it. Okay. What if you can't fix it? Then I've got to propose something. I mean, you got to say, and I've got to say, well, then help me, heal me. Heal me. Don't just help me, heal me. What do we do? Jesus gives us this in Matthew 6. He says, you got to find your treasure and then you've got to put it somewhere else. You got to find your treasure and then put it somewhere else. Now we only get stuff, possessions, because of money. The stuff is just an expression of where we put our money, our treasure. It just reveals what controls us, right? What are we like? It's a de facto picture. Your budget, my budget, it's a de facto picture of what you really value and like. It's so simple. And Jesus says, you can't serve God and money. Mammon, it's usually translated. And he says, look, this can be a rival God. This can be a rival God. If you want to know where your treasure is, just follow your money. Just follow your money. Follow your money where your money goes gladly. So for some of us, no one tells you, like, hey, you really need to try that new restaurant. Like, I'm encouraging you. I know you're not doing it, but you really should. You should do that. I'm going to check up on you this end of this week. I'm going to make sure that you went and you did it. Now do it, okay? And I'm serious about this. You get serious about trying out that new restaurant, okay? Like, for some of us, you're like, I don't need that speech. My money, woo, new restaurant? Where? Let's go. Like, no one's telling you gotta spend money. It just goes. For some of you, it's makeup. I mean, the Korean stuff, that's the good stuff. Am I right? Or is that, you guys laughed. Am I right? It's the good stuff. You know what it is for me? Shoes. I have more shoes than my wife. Technology. Man, that'll get me. You don't have to lecture me about trying to get it. There have been moments in our marriage where we have been the tightest on money. And somehow, some way, Melissa will laugh before she cries. Somehow, some way, I found a way to get a new computer. If it's software or things that are creative tools, money flies. Like, you know where my heart is. It's a roadmap. Now, you can say this, oh, that's really shallow of you, Tim. I don't like buy a lot of stuff. I am so frugal, you do not understand it. Like, I don't need people's approval, I don't need prestige, I don't need a car, I don't do that. But you just save it and you put it away and it's not flashy. You're real classy, I give you that, you're real classy. And you don't really spend, and you're not a consumer. But you're a hoarder, and your thing is control. Man, it's control. I'm building my safety. I'm building my walls. I'm building my castle. I'm building my net. It's my hope. Can you follow the money in your life? Would you want to see where your money flows most effortlessly? Would you want to see the pie chart breakdown? Why not? Why wouldn't you want to do that? Where do you find rest and exhilaration and hope and safety and pleasure? So I know you treasure things and you know that I treasure things because our hearts were made to treasure things. They were built to treasure things. And Jesus says this, I want you to see that the reason why you are not at peace and the reason why you are such a fragile little snowflake princess when it comes to your money being messed with is that you're treasuring things on earth where moth and rust and thieves can mess with it. And then when they mess with it, it messes with you and you're like, oh, I'm at unease in my life and I don't know what to do. Except you don't do that externally. If it's on earthly things, you'll always be anxious. This is an often quoted speech from David Foster Wallace, the late David Foster Wallace, who committed suicide. And he said this address at Kenyon College. You may have heard it before, but he says this. It's a long quote. I'll read it to you. Try to stay locked in. We're almost done. If you worship money and things, if they are where you tap real meaning in life, then you'll never have enough. Never feel you have enough. It's the truth. Worship your own body and beauty and sexual allure, and you will always feel ugly. And when time and age start showing, you will die a million deaths before they finally plant you. There's a break there. And then he says, worship power, and you will feel weak and afraid, and you will need ever more power over others to keep the fear at bay. Worship your intellect, being seen as smart. You'll end up feeling stupid, a fraud, always on the verge of being found out, and so on. So you locate your treasure. That's the first step, but Jesus says this. He says, you need to put your treasure somewhere else. Right? Store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Find a source of meaning, purpose, self-worth, identity that isn't subject to earthly things, and you will be solid and secure and immovable. What does that mean? Well, one of my favorite passages is from 1 Peter 2. And Peter says this, for those who believe, Jesus is the precious cornerstone. And what's funny about that, he says the noun form of precious. So it kind of sounds like this, maybe in English. To those who believe, he is the preciousness. Do I sound like Gollum? A little bit. I'll back off on the Gollum. He is the preciousness. That's very different from just believing in Jesus, isn't it? Like you say, oh no, I believe in Jesus. Yeah, but is he the preciousness? All right, how do I get there? The heart has to be enraptured. It has to be impressed. It has to be dazzled by Jesus, the preciousness, all over again. David Foster Wallace again. I cut out a section of that speech in the middle. He says this, on one level, we all know this stuff already. It's been codified as myths, proverbs, cliches, bromides, epigrams, parables, the skeleton of every great story. The trick is keeping the truth up front in daily consciousness. Jesus had all the wealth, he had all the honor, he had all of the good stuff. Why did he leave it? Question, why did he leave it? Because he was treasuring something that overwhelmed the wealth that he possessed. He treasured something that overwhelmed the wealth that he possessed. What is that? It was in Gabe Pye's prayer. It's you. Your brokenness and crackedness and your disconnectedness hasn't made you worthless. That's what we're putting in our daily consciousness. And not a constant comparison to our reference group. Until we're dazzled by that, boy, we're gonna hold on to all of it. We will. Oh, let's pray. Let's pray into that. Jesus, I feel in my own heart a longing to be dazzled by you because I know that I'm not. and in being dazzled by that light, uncloud our dark eyes. And lead us into generosity. Help us. Heal us, we pray. Amen.